Welcome back. Our thanks again to Andrea Romolo for chatting with us in the last half hour, performing tonight at Petit Campus with Patrick Kreef. Doors at 7. Andrea's on at 8. Patrick a little after 9. Hope to see many of you there. It's a very low ticket price with a high quality of music before it gets freezing this weekend. Mm-hmm. Enjoy it. Now, normally, we start with and talk mostly hockey, but I want to start here. We don't really have a standout Super Bowl moment of what went down on this day, but we have a Pro Bowl moment. The greatest Pro Bowl moment in history, in my opinion, took place on this very day in 2003.
Now, you talk about trust and confidence. There was an article, a story, Mike Vanderjack and your team made some comments questioning maybe your passion and your and the personality of you and Tony Dungy as to being winners.
Yeah, that's hard to believe, Lynn. Here we are. I'm out of my third Pro Bowl. I'm about to go in and throw a touchdown to Jerry Rice. We're honoring the Hall of Fame. We're talking about our idiot kicker who got liquored up and ran his mouth off. So, hey, Al, Dan, what has the sports world come to? We're talking about idiot kickers. He has ruined kickers for life. Akers and Vinatieri, these guys are great guys. They've been getting killed all week because our idiot ran his mouth. So when I get home, I'll deal with it. Tony and I talked about it. It's kind of funny, really, when you think about it. Get in. If he is still a teammate, we'll deal with it. You know, that remains to be seen. But the sad thing is, Lynn, he's a good kicker. He's a good kicker, but he's an idiot.
On Mike Vanderjack, who was a CFL player as well and a champion, Grey Cup champ. Let's bring in Mike Johnson on that note. I want to find out, that was Peyton Manning at the Pro Bowl in 2003. Manning. Yeah, I want to find out if Mike ever had an idiot teammate along the way.
Interesting. You know what I thought you were going to do, Mitch, when you talk about the greatest Pro Bowl moment? I thought it was when Sean Taylor, the recently deceased Sean Taylor, hit the punter. They tried to run a sneak. And he just killed the punter. Like, the Pro Bowl is supposed to be kind of no contact, and he took that absolutely not to heart. But that was something that publicly for Peyton Manning, usually so calm and cool, to light up his teammate like that. And the answer is yes, of course I've had some idiot teammates. 100%. Yes. Like, you think I'm going to play, whatever, 15, 13 years and have 300 different teammates, they're all going to be good guys, they're all guys you agree with or get along with, not a chance. Now, some of them might think that I'm the idiot, which is okay too, but no, there's a couple, not many, like generally, like you're not close to everyone, but you kind of respect everyone and everyone respects you and you know, you're professional about it, but there's a couple that you're like, I'm not sure I like that guy very much, he's a bit of a, you know, a jerk. So yeah, you come across a few every now and then.
Yeah, I should point out in fairness that Vanderjack did apologize, came back, and he followed up those comments with the best year of his NFL career. I don't think he missed a single field goal.
He didn't miss the next year.
That's it. Right? Right.
Well, he'd been overserved, correct?
Well, liquored up, like Peyton said. Yeah, that's, you know, and that's a warning as we inch towards the Super Bowl, especially for people who are well-known in the business. Stay away from your phone and tweeting during Super Bowl weekend if you're imbibing.
Listen, Mitch, before we get onto the hockey, here's my Super Bowl story for you guys. It pains me to this day, and it goes back to the year that I was in Montreal. And, of course, Montreal always has the games on the noon games on Super Bowl weekend.
Right.
So we have the game on the Sunday, and then we go to a bar to watch it all as a team. And we're doing, like, the little square game where you put in the money, and it's kind of blind luck. Like, if the score ends up 13-10 and you have the 3 and the 0, then you win. And it was halftime. And Adam Vinatieri was kicking, never had missed a kick before. It was like a 35-yarder. He'd never missed a kick in the playoffs ever. And if he made his 35-yarder at the buzzer for halftime, I was going to win. It was like a lot of money. It was like $2,000. So in a rare display of obnoxious confidence, I was prancing around saying, give me the money, show me the money, here it comes, come on to daddy. And then what did he do? He misses for the first time ever. And Alex Kovalev, my nemesis, Kobe won it with his. And I'm like, he doesn't need that money. He gets a lot. So I'll never forget that. I'm like, this guy, he's never missed in his life. And now he's going to miss when he cost me a couple $1,000s. I'll never get over it.
Yeah, very, very cocky. I hope Kovalev bought you some vodka shots.
Yeah, he probably did.
Yeah. So before we get to the Habs, there were a couple of games last night I do want to talk about, but more specifically, and it seems to be happening, I started talking about this with Jack Armstrong every Wednesday early in the season, the amount of star caliber players going down almost daily in the NBA. Two more players went down last night in the NHL. Tage Thompson had to come out of the game. He's been battling an injury. So he's being replaced by Rasmus Dahlin, who should have been at the All-Star game anyway. And Mark Stone has undergone back surgery. Who knows if he'll play again this season? Probably doubtful. How do you think this affects the playoff chase and beyond for both those teams specifically?
Yeah, fascinating. First of all, too bad for Tage Thompson because he deserved to be at the All-Star game and be celebrated and kind of have the world, if you didn't know, introduced to how great he's been the last year and a half. So that's unfortunate. For him, maybe it's almost good timing, though, because he can take the 2 weeks, basically not miss a game, and have a chance to fix whatever is ailing him. So maybe in that sense, if it's a relative short-term thing, it should not be a problem. The fact that it's now, while it's not unfortunate that he's not going to the All-Star game, it's not the end of the world because he'll have more time to recoup without missing games. And Buffalo, of course, where they are in the standings, they're right there, basically in eighth spot, kind of jockeying by points percentage. They'll need him virtually every game down the stretch. They can't afford to have him out for any length of time. So hopefully that's okay. I don't think that changes much for Buffalo, provided that he gets better in the 2 or 3 weeks that he has to get better. The Vegas one with Mark Stone is interesting because this is not his first back procedure. He's had a kind of a history of back problems now for a few years. And he is such a connector of players and of the room when he plays. Like, he makes everybody better when he plays on your line, whether you're Jack Eichel or Colin White. Like, that guy looks way better when he's got Mark Stone out there with him. That's why he makes as much money as he does. That's why he's, you know, such an important player of that team. He's unlikely to play again this year, regular season. So that does change a thing dramatically because they've struggled to score goals and to win games without Mark Stone in the lineup. And we know Vegas is uber aggressive, but always in trouble with the cap. Well, Mark Stone makes $9 million. So I have no doubt that they will take the money that is freed up, unfortunately freed up, and use it to go get somebody else to try to fill in for some of the things that Mark Stone does. So I'd expect Vegas to be even more aggressive than usual because as good as they sit, and they're up there leading the division like, kind of back and forth, like they're not guaranteed to even make the playoffs. I think Calgary is 6 points back from first. Like, five teams are separated by 6 points. So I think that is significant for Vegas because it's so long-term to such an important player.
Yeah, they've only won 2 of their last 10. And you talked about them having trouble since Stone went down. Jack Eichel specifically is getting some heat in Vegas. Jeez, it wasn't that long ago at the start of the season through the first month. It was almost like a daily who's got the better record out of the gate, the Bruins or their former coach in Vegas, the Knights.
Yeah.
And since then, they've been just sliding downhill.
Yeah, they've been very 500-ish, which is not great in the NHL today. A lot of teams are around 500. It's fascinating. And I'm curious to see how Jack Eichel's an excellent player. There's no doubt about that. But given the fact that he's always played in Buffalo, and then he had kind of the tricky start in Vegas, neck surgery, jumping in midstream, like he's never really played where he's been the guy on a good team and the pressure's on to make the playoffs, to produce, to come through when it matters. And I'm not suggesting that he won't or that he can't. I'm just suggesting that he hasn't. And now with Mark Stone out and them kind of struggling a little bit and things tightening up in the Pacific, like I think there is legitimate heaps of pressure on Jack Eichel to lead his team into the playoffs, to be the dynamic kind of top flight forward that he is supposed to be and is paid to be and is expected to be. And so that will be interesting to watch, is kind of how he deals with something that he's probably not really gone through at the NHL level before.
Punched around, Teravainen with it, halfway through this Canes power play. Teravainen playing catch with Svechnikov. In the slot, turn to shoot, lost the puck, came to Teravainen, backdoor tap in, and they score, and it's Sebastian Aho.
Sixth straight game, Aho has scored. The Hurricanes into the break with 7 straight wins. Even Kotkaniemi was in on the act with a couple of assists last night. Man, they look good. And there was a lot of speculation they'd be on Bo Horvat. Who do you think they're targeting? Because as good as they are in the regular season, again, it comes down to what happens once the playoffs start.
Yeah, I mean, I think they would be targeting a centerman. Maybe they didn't get Bo Horvat. That price is too steep to pay. And I think whoever they would target, if they're going to pay a significant price for him, it's going to be a guy that they can extend. And they didn't know if they'd be able to extend Bo Horvat because they weren't allowed to have that conversation. But I think you mentioned Kotkaniemi got in the action. that's great. That doesn't happen often enough for a team going to the Stanley. You know, that legitimately is a Stanley Cup favorite, really, at this point. They need a second-line center. So who are the best guys out there? There's Ryan O'Reilly. There's Jonathan Toews. I keep wondering if Dylan Larkin might be available somehow. Sean Monahan, if he gets healthy. You know, any of those guys, you know, you pay less, they probably get a rental. If they're going to go after, like, a Dylan Larkin, then they're going to need to extend him as well. But they're really good, and they really play every single night a similar style, which is a credit to the coach and to the players, and that, like, they almost never beat themselves. Like, you are going to have to play well to get the best of the Hurricanes, because every night they bring the energy, they're very aggressive, they push you up the ice, and there's just no time or space, and makes their goaltenders all look good. Like, their goalies are good, but their goalies are not the best in the league, and yet they seem to have the best stats every year because of the support they have in front of them. They're every bit as good as Boston. I think they are, in the last 30 games, Mitch, 24-3-3 in the last 30 games. Like, so, and that's Bruins, like,
right?
That's better than the Bruins have been the last 30 games. So that's how good they've been for a while.
Yeah, and the Bruins, the last game before the break was the Bruins and Maple Leafs. A lot of build up to that one. Just when you thought that maybe the Bruins were going to have an extended slump, they snap it at 3 games. They beat the Leafs last night 5-2. Do you see, unless there's a significant injury or two, and even with that to start the season, it didn't stand in their way, the Bruins slipping to the point where we actually see a neck and neck with somebody else?
No, not a chance. I mean, you look at, if they play 500, they get to 115 points. 500, and again, 26 teams in the league are at 500 or better right now. So the chance of them being much worse than that, is very, very small, even if they do get injuries, which hopefully they won't. No, I think that they've played themselves into the first overall seed, which is hugely important in the Atlantic, maybe the most important division to win. Because if you think, I don't know, betting lines or whatever, but if you think the top five teams in the league, probably three of them play in the Atlantic, right? Boston's first, Tampa is probably third, Toronto's probably fifth, and you could throw Carolina and Jersey. Like, all the top five, all are in the East, but the top three are in the Atlantic, or three of the top five. So you get to avoid that first round matchup by winning the division. It's really, really important for Boston, and I don't see, it would have to be a precipitous fall, like, shockingly awful turn for Boston to kind of be in a race the last 10, 12 games.
I know there's some hand-wringing going on in Toronto about the inevitable matchup with Tampa Bay in the first round.
Right.
And, you know, I remember sitting through and covering and loving going to Boston every spring. I think it was like 16 out of 18. We knew the Canadiens and Bruins were going to meet back in the old Adams division. It was, nobody complained about it. The Bruins eventually, thanks to Cam Neely and a few other key players, finally knocked the Canadiens out, and that was a historic event. Do you think the National Hockey League thinks that maybe they should go in another direction because of some squawking about the same matchups every year?
I don't. I mean, a lot of people hate the playoff format, but I don't see it kind of land flat for me, because if you plan on making the Stanley Cup final, you're going to have to beat the best teams anyways. And yeah, you might not want to play them in the first round. You'd rather play Tampa in the second and Boston in the third. Either way, to get to where you want to go, you probably have to beat those guys anyways. And I think it's coming from Toronto, because Toronto's not won a first-round series in forever. You know, if they had mixed in playoff success over the last 15 years, a second-round appearance, a third-round appearance here and there, no one would care, nor not to the same degree. I think in many ways it's good to play. Like, I want to see Pittsburgh and Washington play all the time. I want to see Calgary and Edmonton go up against each other. Like, those rivalries, those geographic rivalries are made in the playoffs. You don't think I want to see Tampa and Florida have a chance to play more often than less often? I think it's good for the NHL. Now, it might not be good for Toronto right now, who's trying to get something done in the playoffs, and they're going to have to play good teams, and they might have to play Tampa again, and then Boston again. But I think that makes it even more compelling and more interesting. So, no, I don't have a big problem with it. And I don't even think the Toronto Maple Leaf players do. I just think it's the fans and the media who want to see Toronto be successful. And they realize that the current format makes it difficult right now for the Leafs to be successful. But I don't think there's any appetite for change of the playoff format, nor should there be, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you. Just think how satisfying it would be if, in fact, they knocked off the Tampa Bay Lightning. And if they can't do it, the team's not good enough to win a Stanley Cup.
Thank you. Preach. That's it.
Yes.
Like, if you win it, how great would that feel? The confidence you'd gain from it probably drives you forward, makes it even more difficult to beat you the next time or the next series. And if you can't, you were never good enough to begin with. And that's unfortunate. That's just how it goes.
Finish up with Mike Johnson on Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. So the Canadiens return at one of those back-to-back traditional Super Bowl Saturday and Sunday afternoon games, February 11th and 12th, back-to-back. What do you figure the number one storyline? Like, for Canadiens fans, they're looking at the standings upside down, right, the rest of the way. But so what do you think the number one storyline will be, or maybe should be, the rest of the way for this team?
For Montreal, the storyline will be kind of be two parts, right? They'll be up until the deadline, so the next 3 weeks after they come back. Who's healthy? How well can they play? And what is the market for those players? And that is really quite pivotal. Ken Hughes talk about wanting to get first-round picks and trying to acquire them. Can they unload some of those players that we've talked about? That's the storyline for the first, 3 weeks. Then beyond that, the storyline will be, okay, who's left and who are we building with? And kind of sorting that out and what that looks like. So, but I do think it's almost more important what happens in the first 3 weeks than the last month. And if they're able to somehow pump up the value of some of these players because they play well enough and are healthy enough that they can trade them for something of consequence, that's what this year was always supposed to be about. Hasn't really happened yet. There's like a 3 week window for it to happen, and that'll be important to the Canadians.
Are you working All-Star weekend?
I am flying down to Florida tonight. I will be down there for a couple of days, enjoying the sunshine and the All-Star festivities. Yeah, so not quite a weekend off for me, but I don't mind going down to Florida, sitting in the sun for a couple of days.
Enjoy yourself, and we'll talk next Tuesday. Thank you, as always. Have a terrific weekend.
All right, cheers, guys. The MC fiends only seem to agree that I rock
the world and the society. Outrageous on the stages with a tune of verse. I give praises. Mike Johnson, when he's not doing work for the NHL Network, is with us Tuesday and Thursday a little after 4:30. What are we doing when we come back, Andy Bennett? We're going to get to Terry Haig's question of the day. Do you have a question of the day?
I just gave you
20 minutes to come up with a question.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I'm not as fast as I used to be. I said it's twice as far, the same distance. Okay.
Ticket giveaway?
Here it is. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's total points. He's held the record, NBA total points record, for 39 years. LeBron James, 89 points short. Are you pulling for LeBron to pass him?
Okay.
Whoa, I passed it. Whoa.
Yeah, that's very timely. Much. We're going to talk about it later, actually, as part of our headlines.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, this is very significant, what's about to happen.
Yeah.
In NBA history.
Yeah.
It's taken 40 years to, it's like, yep. You know.
39, yeah.
And we do have tickets to give away to the Australian Pink Floyd show at Place Belle in Laval, September 30th. Tickets go on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m. if you're a Pink Floyd fan, and they are performing Dark Side of the Moon in its entirety. Stay tuned for an opportunity to win those.